Well, hi, everybody. This is Dave. Welcome to our final seminar. Thank you again very much for the responses, the questions, and the feedback that you've given me. Remember, we're going to add some time at the top of the hour for 15 minutes or whatever would be helpful to discuss anything that you'd like to delve a little bit more deeply into or ask that you haven't asked before. And I appreciate all the feedback, and I've wrapped into our discussion. I'm hoping each of the questions and the objectives, the takeaway that you had at the beginning, I wanted to mention something specifically because I think it's so necessary for something like this that we do is a necessary reference and attribution of any studies. You heard me mention these throughout. I don't always give a full reference, but there was a question about something that sounded very much like Simon Sinek had talked about on a TED Talk. I mentioned, I think it was in Seminar 1, beginning with a study that Simon Sinek did. And this was this from his book, Start With Why. So I referenced his study in case you wanted to look at it more or look at some of the things that he's done. He's made some significant contributions. So I wanted to clarify and indicate again the book that I got that from, not the TED Talk. And I didn't mention the book. I just mentioned beginning with Simon Sinek. So questions, clarifications, anything you'd like to discuss briefly before we move into our topic of neuromarketing? Any questions or clarifications? I saw I'm reviewing the questions some of you sent in, and the initial ones clustered around what would be the best way to attract a client, to get techniques to engage someone to sign on with you. So this is what you've probably gleaned, and I'm looking to hear even more from you about your best takeaway, even from this series, is to focus on your audience first. Rather than indicating that you want to tell somebody about your service or your values or your mission statement, make it about the person. What is your greatest challenge? And then listen carefully, because that's the way you enter that circle. We're going to talk some more about that. But it's about the client. It's not about you. The client doesn't care how many degrees, how many initials you have, how many clients you've worked with, if you've worked with famous people or not, or written books or not, they only care about what's in it for them. How can you be a benefit to them? Is it something that you're offering that's unique to professional coaching that they can't do or be themselves, a problem they can't solve that they're willing to pay you for? Those of you who've listened to me talk about the hub statement, the hottest undeniable benefit, in 10 to 12 words, since that's what we attend to and retain, the very specific niche and the benefit that you bring that's unique to coaching that no one else, no other professional can possibly offer, that's unique to professional coaching that someone would get when they work with you that they're willing to pay you for. That's the only purpose of a hub statement, is for marketing. So any questions, any things to talk about briefly before we launch here into the neuromarketing discussion?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, this is Leah from New York.
Yeah, hey, how are you?
Yes, thank God. Thank you.
You saved me from getting lonely there. Go ahead.
Just very quickly, as you mentioned the hub statement right now, can you just give an example of a proper hub statement?
Well, for the niche, cannot be too specific about niche. In fact, I'll send you guys, those of you who haven't trained with me, I've put together some of the hub statements that have been very successful for the people who have trained with me, that have resulted in a full practice even by the end of training. And I have a dozen or 15 that I'll send you that are illustrations of ones that have worked. And notice in the ones I send you, it'll do it as an attachment, the very specific drilled down niche. I've never heard a niche that is too specific in any way. In fact, the ICF did a study not too long ago of all people who dropped their membership. They cast a broad net, looked at why. Far and away, the number one reason was their practice has failed. Then they did a follow-up study to cast a broad net to look at all the possibilities. Number one reason, as much as the next four combined, was the coaches who failed in their practice failed to develop a niche. They wanted to coach everybody about everything and ended up coaching nobody about nothing. So the very specific niche is important. You'll see the illustration here in the examples that I give. One example, more recently, a woman developed a very, very vigorous practice by looking at couples who had had two or more spontaneous miscarriages. A pretty specific niche, because that helped her know where to market, who her referral sources and gatekeepers were, and to know and resonate with the issues and the challenges that that group of people would have. So it informed her about how to resonate with that, where to traffic, where the ecosystems were that these people, the healthcare providers, the various groups like that, and where the watering holes were. Where would they gather? What kind of resources and services would they? So it tells you a great deal. Now, again, you don't have to limit your practice to your niche. It's just a beacon. It's not a fence. It helps you to orient to who you market to, and you can coach anybody about anything, basically. You don't have to have been a CEO to coach CEOs. You don't have to have had an appendectomy to coach a surgeon. But your specialty is professional coaching. And that's exactly what you do. And you're not an expert. You're not a content expert because you're not giving advice or you're not consulting. You're a coach. And that helps you stay in your role. Does that, Leah, answer your question?
Yes, thank you so very much.
And the examples, I think, will do more than just saying one or two here. I'll send that. It's a single page, and it's only part of a page, but it'll give you an idea of some ones that have worked. So thanks
Great.
For that.
I really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyone else or anything else to discuss? Well, I'll put us on lecture mode. And remember to jot down anything you want to talk about at the top of the hour or close to the top of the hour. And I'm going to ask you if you would put in a single sentence, what's the most important thing you've taken away from these seminars, whether it's this seminar this evening or any of the other three or as a composite. So hang on. Okay, we're going to talk about neural marketing aspects of your professional services and products. Here's the quiz. The Wharton School of Business surveyed several thousand professionals to look at the major factor that determined whether someone engaged or declined services from the professional. And this was a range of professionals, not just one specialty area. So what do you think was the most important? Years of experience, reputation, amount of the fee, degrees and certifications, stating the recommendations and fee clearly and confidently, or the state of the economy? So jot down your answer. We'll come back to that. Remember, when you ask a question and don't foreclose it immediately, you keep the inquiry open. And we'll talk a little bit about the Zeigarnik effect if you're interested, or you can look that up in my blog archives. We'll talk about that if we have a moment at the end. So here are four questions to consider right now. Number 1 through 4, and put a yes or a no. Your immediate answer to the question, these are on your outline. Do you earn your living by offering others goods or services? Again, yes or no. Do you work for yourself or run your own operation, even if it's part-time? Do you work for yourself, or let me say it differently. Does your work itself require elastic skills, the ability to do a variety of different functions throughout the day? And finally, do you work in education, training, human resources, or healthcare? If you answer yes to any one of these four questions, you are in sales and service. If you're a doctor, attorney, accountant, consultant, coach, or business professional, you're involved in sales and service. To deliver a fantastic experience to your prospects is the best sales strategy there is. So, neural marketing we'll define as the integration of the biological and social sciences to understand unconscious choices and the underlying brain activity that determines consumer behavior. Remember, 90 to 95% of our operating systems are unconscious. So, that's a whole lot of territory to look at and consider in terms of decision making. When we engage potential prospects with a product or service in mind, we invite them to part with their resources, including time, attention, effort, as well as money. If they do, we will bring value and they will benefit significantly from the engagement. Teachers sell their students that the science lesson they're teaching is interesting and beneficial. In healthcare, the physical therapist helps someone recover from injury to handle resources, time, attention, effort, because patients can be healthier if they use these resources wisely. To move people effectively and powerfully requires seeing them as a participant and a collaborator. Now, here's what happens if you don't do that. When people consult a physician, a consultancy model, going to an expert, fewer than 50% who get a prescription from this expert consultant actually fill it. Of those who do fill it, fewer than 50% of those take it as directed. So when someone's motivated, maybe by fear and pain, inconvenienced by time and travel, have to pay to consult an expert, less than 25% actually follow that expert advice. Why is that? Because it remains, in this example and scenario, the physician's story. It's just data, facts, information. It doesn't become the patient's story. Now, consider this question for yourself and write down a specific number as soon as you hear the question. What percent of your real work involves convincing or persuading people to give up something they value for something you have? What percent? Something that will bring them great value. Almost 10,000 professionals around the world were surveyed to address this question. Nearly everyone considered this aspect a crucial component of their success. Yet, while most believe that direct persuasion is crucial for professional success, the time allocated to engaging and directly persuading people was in the low single digits. What we find valuable and what we actually do may differ significantly. When we work for ourselves as entrepreneurs, we become salespeople as well. I'm not suggesting a sales mindset. I'm just talking here, so hang with me. Yet, you can tell the ones who don't do this. They don't move people. You can tell because their kids are very skinny. Now, the persuasion industry, now led by neuromarketing, focuses on most everything we buy. What we purchase for emotional reasons and then justify by logic is shaped in ways so subtle that we may have failed to recognize them. Here's an example in influence. A cigar manufacturer spent considerable money on the advertisement, the entire set, the actors that depicted a beautiful smiling woman handing out cigars to her husband and his friends. Never mind the sexism and the biases here. Let's just stick with the story for this example. This was attractively done in an elegant English library setting and widely displayed. The result, a dramatic fall in cigar sales. Why? When men smoke cigars, they unconsciously feel dominant and important. It's part of an identity. By showing a woman encouraging a man to smoke and being subservient to her offering, the advertisement psychologically countered the male customer's intent and identity. We'll come back to identity in a bit. So here's some misconceptions about selling. For several years, my good buddy Art Wilson was the number one salesperson in IBM's group of over 10,000 healthcare professionals before he moved to a senior executive position at IBM. Then he took an early retirement to start his own, I mean really early, like in his early 40s, at about the time we started coaching our kids together, to start his own hugely successful consulting company, working with the sales forces of multinational corporations. And you'd never guess he was in sales. He's a big, gentle, laid-back, lovable guy, kind of like I see myself. So in researching this material, I asked him if there were common misconceptions about selling. Here are the two biggest ones that he passed on. One, selling is a natural gift. For more than 90% of people, including the most successful salespeople, this is absolutely not true. Someone may do the right thing for the right reason, but it has to be combined with the right style and emotion. It's an art and a science with its own body of knowledge. The second most common misconception, and he's worked with many throughout the world and some of the best salespeople have no call reluctance. A general pervasive misconception. Over 90% of the best salespeople regularly have call reluctance, but they do it anyhow by getting in the optimum state of mind and sticking to their plan. Pick people you want to reach out to and do it. You do not have to be motivated. Remember, we've talked, in order to do something, you do not have to be motivated. You only need a plan and stick to it. And that's our brain's job description, is to make us want to stay with the default mode, to stay with what we're doing, rather than try out something new. So shrink the change, a designated number of contacts per day, for example. From a number of conversations and interviews with outstanding sales professionals, these two questions form the heart of the sales exchange. These two questions. If the person you're selling to agrees to buy, will his or her life improve? And secondly, when your interaction is over, will the world be a better place than when you began? If the answer to either of these questions is not yes, you need to recalibrate. It's said that marketers often make these mistakes, assuming people are rational, assuming people are eager for change, assuming that once someone knows the way you know things, that they're going to choose what you choose or offer. Here's the key. It's what you think you already know that will most prevent you from learning. Let's talk about the 1% now. Professor Harold Coe teaches law and emphasizes that in an attempt to understand the law or understanding just about anything, the key is to focus on the 1%, to not get lost in the details, but to think about the essence of what's really important, the 1% that gives life to the other 99%. Understanding that 1%, and especially being able to explain it to others, is the hallmark of a strong position. The 1% is the essence of simplicity and clarity, whether you're selling a product or a service or trying to offer or convince someone of something. What's the 1%? When you can answer that question for you and what you're offering and convey it to the other person, they're likely to be moved. Einstein said, if you can't state your position simply, you don't understand it well enough. Seth Godin doubled down to Einstein and said, if you can't state your position in 8 words or less, you don't have a position. The purpose of the 1%, or think of it as the purpose of an engagement, a statement to someone, not just a pitch, because that gets into a paragraph, and somebody's going to stop listening after 10 to 12 words. The essence, the purpose, is not to move someone else to adopt your idea. The purpose is to offer something so compelling that it begins a conversation. The measure of success after your statement is when the other person says, tell me more. That's the success of the hub statement. Tell me more. The other person begins being a participant to eventually arrive at an outcome that both of you collaboratively engage. So, let's look at the value proposition and to consider three different types and to see perhaps maybe where what you're doing fits in here and how it fits with you. To articulate your 1%, consider three common types of value propositions. There's a one-word pitch. What's the one characteristic you most want associated with your name, your business, your brand? A one-word equity. When someone thinks of you, they associate that word. When anyone says that word, they think of you. For me recently, it was to make up a word, neuromentor. It amalgamated psychology, neuroscience, performance science, and mentor coaching. I liked it so much, I trademarked it and initiated the first in a new series of offerings. Other examples, each to date a little more famous than NeuroMentor. What technology company do you think of when you hear the word search? What credit card company comes to mind when you hear the word priceless. Obviously, Google and MasterCard. In his re-election campaign, President Obama, in 2012, built his entire strategy around one word. Remember that? Forward. Here's a second, a question pitch. In 1980, Reagan was running for president of the United States in a really grim economy. Reagan simply asked a question. He didn't try to answer it. He just put it out there. Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? It was designed to make people come up with their own reasons for agreeing or not, or to think about it. When people come up with their own answers for agreeing or believing something, they endorse the belief more strongly and become more likely to act on it because it becomes their story. Remember I mentioned early on, probably the most challenging people I've worked with to emphasize, to get them, rather than telling people what they should be doing, professional coaches. They know exactly whatever player on that field or court need to be doing, and when they tell them, it usually doesn't work. It certainly doesn't build a team. So the antithesis of that is to simply ask a question, because for that player, it then engages someone to look together and creates the beginning of a collaborative framework, because you're looking together to co-create an answer. Think about what we do in coaching. We ask a simple, brief, clear, specific question, and then wait 10 words or less, ideally, if we adhere to neuroscience, and wait for the client to begin to answer. The question pitch is designed to make people come up with their own reasons for agreeing. When they come up with their own answers for agreeing or believing something, they're not going to sign on to what you think or believe or facts you give anyhow. They endorse the belief more strongly and become more likely to act on it because it becomes their story. They're not that patient who's told what to do, who in less than one in four instances is going to do it, not because they're oppositional, but because it's not their story. It doesn't fit with how they see or believe and sign on for. So here's the third, the Twitter pitch. Brief, simple, specific, a micro message, originally at least, of 140 or fewer characters. We're going to have to update that now. the X pitch. The mark of an effective tweet, like that of an effective pitch, is that it engages a recipient and encourages that person to take the conversation further, to collaboratively look together instead of look for a reason to agree or oppose. Further, maybe responding, sharing a tweet, clicking a link, signing on for a seminar. So what tweets, again, in old language here, but I don't apologize. What tweets do you think have the highest rating? Readers assign the highest rating to tweets that ask questions of followers. This confirms the power of questions to both engage and to persuade. So, let's look at how you can listen to learn. The principle here, asking the right questions has more power than giving people the right answers. You know this from coaching already. Appreciative inquiry, a whole body of work and research, can get much better results than seeking out and solving problems. Appreciative inquiry is what we do in coaching. Instead of problem solving, we engage to collaboratively look for challenges, opportunities, and a game plan, a system. So let's look at the preparation, your purpose and plan. So, to consider for your purpose, three key questions might help you prepare your value proposition, your pitch, internally, whether you say it or not, it's for you. You clarify your purpose by making sure that you can answer these questions. What do you want the other person to know? What do you want the other person to feel? What do you want the other person to do? Secondly, after your purpose, your plan. Before you connect with a prospect, write down the following four things. what would we talk about that would be the highest value objective for a client for that interaction? Clear, brief, and succinct, remember. What are 2 to 3 good questions to ask the prospect? If this call or discussion or email is successful, what's the next best action for that person and for me to take? If we have time, what are some additional possible topics for the discussion? Now, once you do that, throw it away because you do not want to be referring to the questions you should be asking. You want to fully engage in the flow, in the reciprocity, and the mindset of the flow of the conversation. If you at any instant stop and ask, what's a good question to ask here, in sports, that's a choke. So use that rather than trying to find the right question to get back in flow and in the engagement of the discussion with the client. Now, for most people, the opposite of talking isn't listening, it's waiting. When others speak, we usually divide our attention between what they're saying now and what we're going to say next. Now, that result is a mediocre halfway position on both. You're halfway listening, it doesn't work as well. Some professionals don't even bother to wait. A typical study found that physicians interrupt the majority of patients in the first 18 seconds that they begin to speak during an appointment. This often prevents the patient from describing what brought them to the office in the first place. Here's an example of listening differently. Suppose you're raising money for a charity and ask someone to donate $200. She says, "Well, sorry, I can't give $200." Well, consider that, reframe that as an offer. Perhaps you can donate a smaller amount. Or she might say, "No, I can't give right now." Consider that as an offer as well. Focus on the right now and ask when might be a better time. Or even consider the entire sentence as an offer, perhaps to contribute to your charity in some other way, such as being a volunteer. This way to hear responses as offers, to immediately reframe as an offer, which comes in all shapes and sizes, is to reframe the way you listen and then change the way you respond. Remember, how we frame something boots up a mindset that processes the remainder of the conversation, and you're reframing it for you and for the other person as well. When both parties view an encounter as an opportunity to learn, the desire to sell or to win fades to the background. It's not about selling. It's not about winning. It's a different mindset of collaboration and engagement. When we move from selling to serving, we engage the recipient as a collaborator and become empathically attuned to their needs and to our effectiveness in benefiting that person. This non-salesy selling is the ability to influence, persuade, and change behavior while crafting a link between what others want and what you can provide them. We elicit from people what their specific goals are and frame what we do to help them achieve these goals. So here is a highly condensed summary of 3 phases of sales mastery. I would probably want to reword that as engagement mastery. 1, engage. 2, enroll. And 3, create conviction. I want to just highlight these 3 because each component is based on knowing who your client is, the specific person you're about to engage in conversation. Remember, someone will make a decision, and including a purchase decision, on the basis of how and who they see themselves to be, what fits with their identity. 1, engage, to connect and create interest. Now, here's one way to think about it. Important to your story is your hero. Who's the hero of your story? Now, heroes come in all varieties: teller, listener, customer, product, location, tribe. The hero needs to fit the goal and, of course, the person. The hero is the character in the story who gives the audience a point of view. All the passion in the world won't do any good unless you have some place to put it. That's where the hero comes in. The hero serves as a guide and a surrogate. the character that the reader or listener identifies with. If the audience experiences the story through the hero and the story leads the hero to embrace a call of action, then your audience will automatically hear your call to action that's embedded as well. The hero enables your audience to feel the change your story promises. Remember we talked before, we decide to do what we do on the basis of how we imagine we're going to feel when we do it. And that's based on living authentically into our identity. So it's a combination of emotional experience and identity combined. When those combine, that is a slam dunk about a decision. In every story, there's an element that can make the difference. That's the hero, the character, the product, the brand the reader or viewer identifies with. Focus on the experience you deliver. Now, in the first seminar, we talked about how business and marketing stories like novels and film consist of three parts: the challenge, the struggle, the development, and the resolution. The hero faces the challenge and fights through the development, the struggle, to the resolution. The hero may sometimes seem surprisingly hard to pinpoint, but unless you do, you have no story. So when people donate to a charitable cause, it's not to save the lives of tens of thousands of kids, but the best story is how you can save one child. You can be the hero. For example, donation increased and always increases when moving from the abstract to the specific. Here's an example. A famine in Ethiopia was significantly enhanced in donation when substituting a picture of Roika, a 7-year-old who faces a threat of severe hunger and even starvation. At that initial transition, the donation immediately increased 25% and grew from there. So how do you make your prospect the hero for your professional engagement? Here are three questions. Ask, what do you want to achieve? Or questions like this. These are just examples. What do you want to achieve? Where would you ideally like to be in 1 year? And what constitutes an amazing achievement for you? Now, those are more likely questions that the client will want to reflect on, and you can put those in your, those of you who train at CTA call them the welcome packet. I call mine the client information packet. The information packet of 3 or 4 pages, the last page is the agreement, the contract, to send a client to fill out prior to the first session so that the client already has begun before we start, and I have that copy and print it and put it in the client's chart. And it includes things like, what are your greatest challenges? What would you like from your coach? Where would you like to get to? The kind of questions that these three represent. You need to know the single most important thing you can offer someone. Now, remember, have I said this before or 7 other times? It's not about you, it's about them. To find the single most important thing, and here are 6 keys to preparation. And these are just guidelines. Know your prospect's challenges and needs. And you're going to know these when someone is in your niche and you know these people, this group, and where they traffic and what their challenges are quite well. Know your own product, that's your coaching services, for example, and its advantages and benefits. Know your competition, but never depreciate a competitor. Know the potential objections to have answers ready. We're going to come back to that. Expect the best, a state of positive anticipation. Create demand, ideally, for the prospect to convince himself or herself. And this is a state of mind, and reflect on what we talked about last seminar. Anchor yourself for success. Peak performance comes from being in a peak state, practicing and performing in that state. the hallmarks of a true professional is the ability to manage a state of mind. So, and then from that state in making effective contact, look at your specific goals. Be creative, playful, and fun. You know the words repeatedly I've mentioned of my favorite grandmother. If you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. She hadn't been wrong yet. Have a plan for what you're going to say and do it in abundance with qualified contacts. You're more likely to stop yourself from making contact if you're not in a peak state or if you believe, for example, that you're an interruption. To engage the prospect, connection and support and rapport, particularly, are the foundation of persuasion. Prospects will choose you because they trust you. They feel connected to you. They trust you, like you, and especially because they have confidence in you. This confidence is the belief that you can help them get what they want or need. Importantly, they will choose you because they believe you have their best interest at heart. Now, here's a very important answer to the Wharton School of Business quiz. The single factor that most determines whether someone engaged or declined professional service, it was the same both ways. The clarity and confidence of stating the recommendation and the fee. If it was done without clarity or confidence, people declined. When it was done with confidence and clarity, confidence is a state of mind. A state of mind is more instantly contagious than the fastest virus. Someone will feel the answer and then kick it up through their left prefrontal cortex to make it a logical and conscious and intellectual decision and say, yeah, I need this. But they've already made a decision at their midbrain based on the confidence they feel, knowing where they want to go and believing that you're the person to do it with them because you have that confidence, you've conveyed it, and they sign on to join in with that and make it official. Caring people buy from caring people and will even help you close as long as you have the prospect's best interest at heart. People want to feel cared for. We all want to be appreciated. People love people who change their state. That's why entertainers are paid so much more than educators, pro athletes more than service people. We want to be around people who change our state for the better. Here's the law of reciprocation. Whatever you put out, it will come back many-fold. That includes positive or negative. Three psychological aspects for earning instant credibility. Now, think about this, not as a gimmick, but just as a position of objectivity. Argue against your own product or service. Indicate who the product or service is not for. Make that part of your recommendation if you recommend something else for someone. It indicates you're not trying to sell to anybody, but a more specific benefit for certain people, that you're a professional. You've done an assessment, and you make a recommendation based on your best judgment for that person at this time. Secondly, this sounds even a little more gimmicky. People believe precise numbers. Think about this. Which is more believable? 60% of American households recycle regularly. 60.37% of American households recycle regularly. 78% of participants said the more specific number was more believable because it inferred accuracy. When you make a claim, provide proof to back it up. Different forms of proof if no scientific studies exist. Statistics, personal stories, testimonials, research, professional or media-given accolades. That's why people do testimonials. In the second area, enroll. Discover your prospect's needs and challenges. What are their needs, their interests, their challenges now? They're real problems that we can help them solve, that we can help them do or be that they haven't or been able to do themselves. Highlight the problems, the issues, and resonate with the pain. Four qualifying questions to have in mind, not necessarily out loud. the needs. What does a prospect really need? What are their wants? What do they want? Do they know the difference between the two? The challenge. What is their primary challenge now? And then are they able to make the decision to engage with you or not? Remember from coaching and the simple coaching model, focus changes state. What would be the best benefit of you doing this? When your question prompts someone to imagine, it becomes real for them. You're not telling them. You're not giving them information or facts or data. You're asking, what would be the best benefit of you engaging now in professional coaching with me? If you told them instead of asking them, they wouldn't believe it. Remember, facts and information are outside in, not the decision-making areas of the brain, the outer circle of the brain. So to enroll, do two things. Ask questions. And secondly, do something very real. Engage all five senses to give a full experience. Some of the highest paid people in this country are people who induce state changes. What sells is what puts someone in a better state. So here's an exercise, just to think about it this way. Every night, for 7 nights, beginning tonight, come up with 3 ideas about how you can get potential prospects to feel like they already own your product or service before they buy it. Think of creative and unique ways to do that consistently, or, depending on your biorhythms, first thing in the morning. 3 questions, 3 ideas each day. Most of the 21 that you come up with over the next 7 days may seem kind of goofy as you look at them or read them, but you only need 1 or 2 to change your business. An example is a realtor whose clients like a particular house they viewed but haven't decided. He then, and this story I'm including for Chris, who probably originated this, one of the best known people in this area in this country. In this story, he then orchestrates an entire meal catered to the family in the home that they're considering. They have a fabulous meal, see the fresh flowers he's brought in, can picture themselves. They don't even have to picture them. They're experiencing themselves in this home, enjoying family, enjoying a meal, all the sensory engagement. That house and the experience become their story. His close rate, 80%. So model success. Find successful people and see what they do. They most likely will make the experience real using all 5 senses and make it about the person's story and developing that. If someone's eating food, they change their state, and the state links to the immediate anchor. That's why so much business is done at lunches and dinners. The realtor changes the state of mind and the purchasers and linked pleasure and family togetherness with that house. He created a vivid Rorschach for the family to project their hopes, their excitement, even things like, well, where would you put your major TV for the family room? They're picturing everything. What's happening around someone when they have a strong feeling will be linked. It will be anchored. It's not logical. Is there any relationship between dog chow and a bell? If they're coupled, there is. Pavlov showed us a dog, and he thought so, and it turned out to be true. Pavlov's dog linked the bell with food and salivated. Then only the bell was enough to cue the anticipation. Put people in an environment that creates the state you want to link to your product. An example is the brilliant series of Super Bowl Budweiser commercials of the dog and the Clydesdale, who are buddies. They induce a state of mind of connect, at least for me, of connection and bonding and the release of oxytocin in the brain. Here's the best signal of successful oxytocin release. Aww. The message goes right to your amygdala and hippocampus then to connect that experience with Budweiser. Another example, the new car smell that puts you in a state to buy a new car. BMW makes their brochures with a new car smell. I can attest to that. The total sensory and emotional experience with the salesperson, that's you, matters. Get creative. Brainstorm. There's always a way to make it real and effective. Ask questions. Create an experience. Point, tell, and show. You want a blank that will blank. Is that correct? You want an investment that will bring you security and income. Is that correct? Ask a question that will put people's minds back on the challenge. Focus on the experience they're buying. Show to emphasize if all of it came true. If you had a seminar for your people, what would be the most important thing they get out of it? If you had 3 results, what would those be? If you don't get those, what it would cost you? An example from one of my training program offerings. If your organization had an internal mentoring program, how would your people benefit, especially if the mentors were trained in the mind and brain science of change, including conversational, social, and emotional intelligence? Ask questions, don't tell them. Ask how much more effectiveness could you have if you did this. Don't tell them, get them to tell you. So, another exercise. Write 5 questions to make it feel to the client that that client already owns your service or product. An example, the real estate agent showing a house. The agent doesn't ask what you think about the living room, but instead ask where you put the entertainment center. The agent wants to have the prospect experience it as if they've already bought it. It's the same collaborative framework that is a hallmark of coaching. We collaborate with the client to focus on the client story and the development of that. It's not about us and our story. We're not ghostwriting or running in plays for the client. We're helping them develop their story. The third area, compel and create conviction. People don't buy facts or features. They buy benefits for themselves. Here's a key. Selling is the transfer of emotion. For someone to buy, they must feel certain they will get what they want. Conviction, though, starts with you first, then your client. But they have to buy or attend an event or just listen even for their reasons, not yours. The number one way here, give them the experience and conviction that they will get what they want out of your product or service. The number two way, match to their number one value. For example, if it's freedom, show them how it will enhance their freedom. Find the dominant emotion for buying, even though the prospect will want to believe it's for logical reasons. Copywriters tell us there are 5 great motivators in marketing. I'm just saying this so you can kind of juxtapose this. Fear. Car and life insurance people use this. Exclusivity, to be special or chosen. Remember my granddaughter Caitlin's bear story from Seminar 1. When narcissism goes shopping, a sense of specialness appeal even creates a special bond, an exclusive offer, a private invitation. Third, greed. Now, although it has a negative connotation, the true meaning of greed is a rapacious desire for more, to succeed massively. 4, guilt. Nonprofits sometimes use this. And 5, need for approval. Product advertisements for cars, watches, other luxury goods of how it will position you. Give prospects several units of conviction to justify buying. A unit of conviction has some different components. An assertion, you will, a fact, well, because, benefit, which means to you, or evidence, or even substitute testimonials. Permission to ask questions, or simply closure. In your opinion, do you feel, ask a question of the client. The task of sales involves the science of neuromarketing. The questions you ask people determine what they focus on. At any time, we're only focusing on a very small band of data, what's available to us. Our brains are like a camera, and that we only see what we focus on. Do one feature at a time. Not a whole load. It'll overwhelm somebody. Our imagination is 10 times more powerful than our will. So here are some ideas that I want to close with about converting objections into commitments. This fits, and I've added this specifically in a little more detail because of some questions that were sent in. If someone has an objection, rather than counter or ignore it or circumvent it, find out specifically what it is. Get curious about it. You don't want to try to counter it because, you know, it's like denial. If you deny something, you've engaged it even more so. Find out what it is. An objection can equate to getting more information. Consider it that way. Look at the possibility here. The best salespeople average 5 objections before a conversation. And be sure that an objection is not what you're projecting onto the person. An objection is a question in disguise. It provides an opportunity to hear the primary concern. It kind of crystallizes it so you can address it and reframe it. Understand the person's belief or fear and listen for the real question. So the mistake here is to fight an objection. The key to influence is to align with the person. Get inside the circle with them. So in spite of the fear, will the benefit be greater in doing it? If the answer is yes in their gut, they're going to proceed. The best way to respond to an objection is to take each objection and interpret it as a question. Rather than a reason for not buying, hear it as a request for more information. Well, I can't afford it. Reframed, please show me how I can afford so it's worth it. Well, I got to talk it over with somebody else. Reframed, please give me enough reasons I can go ahead and buy it now without having to check and get someone else's opinion. Welcome an objection because it's information and a stepping stone to success. Treat an objection as powerful and important. Perhaps even compliment the objection as a good question, if it is, because it shows both of you what to focus on. So here are some considerations, just in brief overview, to convert objections into commitments. Don't engage the objection by countering it. Focus directs attention. Hear them out. Feed it back as a question. Get more information. Is this the real objection? Align with this with the prospect to collaborate. In a collaboration, you're on the same side. Both of you are in the circle. If you fight an objection, it'll limit you. Instead of countering the question with an objection, align with it. I appreciate how you feel about that. Or it is an expensive investment, and it's a significant investment that can change for the rest of your life or your business. Turn the objection into a question. Reframe it. It seems like the real question may be, can you get enough value to justify buying it? Or it sounds like your concern is, how can you get benefits now? Focus on the benefit rather than the concern. For example, if there's an issue with expense, reframe it. Brag about it. Do it up front. Assume the sale. The best persuaders assume the sale. Congratulate them on a wise decision. Don't thank them for the sale. The congratulation focuses on a wise decision. So just a couple of thoughts about the psychology of closing. This is the point both the salesperson and the prospect hate the most. Do the close as quickly and as painlessly as possible then. For example, a man had a painful tooth that he knew needed to be extracted. He called his dentist, whose patient he had been for a long time. The two knew each other really well. He asked how much the dentist would charge him to extract a tooth and how long would it take. The dentist said, well, I'll charge you $185, and it'll only take about 2 minutes. The man responded, only 2 minutes? That's a lot of money for 2 minutes. The dentist said, well, if time is an issue, I can take as long as you want. So have your closings planned in advance, word for word. This is what I recommend for in doing the sample session when you get to the recommendation of your professional services. Have that down. Script it. Do it in a couple of sentences that covers everything so that it sounds like you're saying it for the first time and you're saying it with confidence. And you're engaging a positive, enthusiastic mindset. You're speaking clearly, briefly, and simplicity. Simplistically. There are some other things in the outline that I won't go over, But remember, just in one summary, the hero is the person, place, product, or brand that enables someone to feel the change that your story promises. So to you, how can you make the client the hero of his or her story? So make it easy, create a future, create a relationship that lasts through the years. The most important part of the engagement is to give more than is expected, to generate an ongoing relationship. So here are, in summary, some strategies of successful people and top sellers. One, affect your own emotional state. Reset after the last experience. A number one quality, prepare yourself physically and emotionally. Two, qualify prospects for their deepest need, the core emotional need that drives that person, the challenge or the pain point, so that you can then resonate with that and address how they can get to where they want to be in a collaborative way together. And in this way, three, you manage the prospect's state. And four, give prospects a way to justify buying to satisfy a need. And five, remain flexible. The person most flexible masters the situation. To be successful, know the outcome, know the action. Make your recommendation clear, brief, specific. Know what getting closer and what getting further away looks like. Change your approach until you get what will benefit the prospect. And finally, become a team player, consistently attuned to the prospect's needs. Is there more value than the concern they bring? Create and sustain interest, build trust and rapport continuously. So the final overview, single sentence, I think I can do it in a single sentence. Imagine inventing a device that can record memories, dreams, ideas, and transmit them to your brain. Two sentences. This device, this game-changing technology, is called storytelling. Now, I'd like to begin our discussion by hearing from you in maybe a succinct sentence, if you dare to engage in this challenge. What's the most important thing you've taken away in these four seminars? Let me put us on discussion mode if you'll manage the background. We're in discussion mode. I'm interested in what's the most important thing you're taking away? One at a time now. Either from this seminar or from all of the four seminars combined. Are they going to make any difference? What's the important thing you're taking away?
You know, Dave, this is Chris T. Bell.
Hey, welcome. How are you? Speaking of, I thought I'd call you out by that reference. Go ahead.
The storytelling is really, I like the way that you pull a lot of this together through the storytelling done in a healthy way. And just, I've refined my notes just from, you know, listening to the story, how to create that story that uh-huh. does make a difference, an impactful difference. And I learned a lot out of this session, and then I'm going to go back and listen to two that I missed. But this one and the first one, and then I just think you've got a really great gift here in being able to convey some of the things that are really compelling that I know I've learned in my own personal experience.
Well, thank you, and I just want to emphasize that, and from a mind and brain perspective, you've heard me repeatedly refer to the importance of storytelling because our brains are hardwired for story. It's how we understand something, how we make sense of it, how we shape it together, and then how we remember it. And once we complete a story, it's more accessible to memory. And that's also how we most engage with someone. As recently as 1996, mirror neurons were discovered in Parma, Italy. They observed when they gave a monkey a shock, never mind the non-humane aspects of this. They don't do this anymore, but it helped us discover mirror neurons. They also observed in the brain register of a monkey observing that monkey that got the shock, the exact area, that part of the brain in the monkey observed mirrored exactly what that monkey was experiencing, whether it was a shock, whether it was a pleasure. And this began as recently as 1996, the whole area of scientific inquiry of mirror neurons. And we talked before about how when you engage someone with a story and you bring in the sensory elements, that will resonate with that particular sensory aspect of their brain. When you have something visual, it's going to activate their visual cortex. So this is something to keep in mind that can inform our empathic resonance with someone and co-creating an experience. And the experience ideally engages all five senses of the brain, as well as thinking and feeling and behaving. So this is a component that I think can be very valuable and resonating, because this is a question that we have in coaching without even putting it in the foreground of a formal question. What is the client experiencing right now? Would a comment on the experience, let's say the client comes in and just, you know, begins with, there are just so many things, I just feel so overwhelmed and feel sort of exhausted. So rather than immediately jumping into the content, we may want to comment, you know, I hear how overwhelming it's been for you. Maybe even look at how they're addressing that, as well as then creating a map of a component of that to serve as a model of how to pick one thing, develop a system to deal with it that can be used as a model for future things. So thanks very much, Chris. That's a great summary, and I appreciate that. Who else? What else? What else has been helpful or valuable, or other questions that you have? Let's stick with what you find valuable first. Any summary that you have of what you're taking away that you'd like to share with our group? Then any questions or aspects that you'd like to discuss a bit more than we have? Things you'd like to elaborate or illustrate in any way? I'd really like to hear from you and what's resonating. Anyone?
Yes, this is Leia again.
Yeah, please go ahead.
I'm not quite sure about the concept of the hero in the story. How to? My question is how to put that into the story.
Well, as you're, let's say a very simple example is that when your client begins to present to you, and they're feeling overwhelmed, they're feeling like they may be assuming some things that they're not able to bring about, and you need to help them sort out what they can determine and what they can't, to let go of what they can't, to focus more on what. We help them become the hero of their own story, to recognize just in the basic structure first of the coaching engagement that it's about the client. What would you like us to focus on that would be most helpful right now? Where would you like us to get to at the end of this? So they become the subject. They're the protagonist. It's about them, and you're developing the story with them as central to that, and knowing that whatever they are, at least what I'm assuming, and I'll be conveying this in some way. Whatever we think and feel and experience, we create each moment. And a kind of application is whatever someone's experiencing, they're either creating or agreeing to. So if they're agreeing to something they don't want, they have abdicated their role of the hero of their own story. They're not creating their experience, knowing that they are, and feeling the effectiveness and mastery of doing that, and then with us creating a system to develop that story. A system may be a micro system of a specific aspect. I'm being overwhelmed by a number of things. I've got so much to do. You know, what aspect of that can we focus on to give you some traction right now? Now, the unstated part that we may put into words later is this is also a model of how to engage that and create a system. If you want to change, don't focus just on the goal. Winners and losers have the same goal. Focus on the system. The simple coaching model is a system. What you want to focus on, where you want to get to, and then at the end, the closure that brings it into a process of making it a more permanent story and memory. How would you summarize in a sentence what you're taking away? Same question I'm asking you guys right now. And then what do you commit to do before we meet again? Remember I mentioned a very simple example of creating closure is University of Waterloo study did two match groups of people reading the same story. One read it out loud, one read it silently. The ones that read it out loud did 40% better on the test than the ones who read it silently. They put it in an output channel, and that creates closure. And closure creates a more permanent and a more accessible memory to go back to. So this is what makes a memory of this session and the story of this session for the client. Is that a decent application, Leah?
Yeah, I appreciate that. It just, when I first heard you use the term hero, it just seemed to have like a different connotation to me. But
Oh, yeah.
That's why I wasn't so clear.
Well, I want to focus on the story rather than hero, because hero is one of those things like, you know, somebody says paranoid, and 20 different people will mean 20 different things, and hero can be one of those, and I probably need to find a better word, but it's focusing on the client story with the client as the point of reference.
Okay, that's
we're doing.
That's perfect. I appreciate that so much. Thank you.
Yeah, terrific. Great question. Thank you. What else? I could not have answered more questions than I raised, so what are some of the questions you have based on what you heard, or any applications that you may feel less than pristinely clear about? Anyone?
Okay, I just want to say another comment.
Yeah, please.
I'm like sorting all the material that you gave to us, so I think I just have to imbibe it and dwell on it. I'm not sure that I have questions right now because everything that you said is just found so helpful. I just want to incorporate it in my system that I will use, you know, with my clients.
Yeah, one of the hardest things, especially in beginning coaches, and Lee, you may be well beyond this, but is for us to, you know, our minds and our brains are hardwired and the software developed to continue doing the same things. And once we repeat something, it becomes automatic and it's easier to do it. And that's the brain's job description. So anything that's different, the brain is going to get uncomfortable. We're not going to be as sure because we don't know the outcome. And the brain's error detection mechanism says, this isn't what I expected. So the initial thing is to move from that comfort zone, that automatic repetition, the default, to do something different. And that different may be to offer someone a sample session or to initiate an announcement of the opening of your coaching practice, or to do some, to do whatever is different, you don't have to be motivated. Remember, I said early on, I've worked with a number of pro athletes and actors and performers. They aren't motivated to go to the gym every day, but they do it because they know that that's what they need to do in order to do what's next. All they have, not motivation, they only need two things. One is a plan, and two is to do it, to put it into action. So that's a question we have when somebody's not doing something. They're always showing us exactly what it's like to be them in the conversation. So if they're showing us that they're sort of all over the place, they start taking tangents and get lost in the weeds, we want to know specifically what they want to focus on and where they want to get to. That's our map. Then they're going to show us why they haven't been successful without paying you top dollar to help them perform better than they've ever performed before. They'll show you exactly what it's like. So the first question when they are not getting what they want is, do you have a plan? And if they have a plan, help me understand how you're putting that into action. One of those two areas, or both, are going to be where you're going to earn your money, because that's the process that comes alive. The content is real easy. You know, somebody comes in and says, well, you know, I just need to develop a kind of a plan or a structure for my week. That's easy stuff. You can do that after the second class. The process here is how someone, that 90 to 95%, that will manifest in the relationship. Every algorithm that someone operates on that's important will manifest in the relationship with you. This is why in coaching we can do so much more than therapy or counseling or analysis. We don't have to go back into the past. In fact, that's a distraction. That's already happened. Our focus is the choice architecture of here and now, and the client is going to show you exactly why they have difficulty so that you can collaboratively create a better system. And this is going to be perhaps manifest in a reluctance to put themselves out there, to make an announcement, to do marketing. That's not comfortable. My mentor coach, when I did my training, drug me kicking and screaming into marketing. Maybe that's why I want to help you guys a little bit more. But as a physician, as a shrink for 25 years, marketing, still back in the era that my daughter calls when you skied with wooden skis and had wooden braces, Dad, that marketing was anathema. You did not do advertising. Now it's so commonplace. Every third ad is for a physician group or a hospital or a drug. But that is something that there's still reluctance. Remember the two things that I got from Art, the reluctance to initiate calls, the belief that, well, it's a natural for something. No, nothing's natural that's new and different. Your brain is always going to say, all right, you made a mistake. So you have to know that this is part of your plan. It's part of the next step to tolerate the discomfort and still proceed, and to know that it's not your intuition telling you it's the wrong thing or your gut saying you made a mistake. No, this is simply your reading and printout of this is different. Every step into the new and unknown, and remember this for every client, is going to register as somewhat different, a trepidation, an uncertainty. The reframing here is that uncertainty, that trepidation, even that anxiety can be reframed as validation of progress, affirmation that you're in new territory together, so that the client can develop that capacity to read and interpret themselves. So ultimately, our best hope, our objective, is with mentor coaching, so the client won't need us anymore because they've internalized the whole process for them. It's become part of their story. This self-reflection, self-awareness that we've helped them develop, the self-empathy to be aware of a whole spectrum of things that were just in that top 5 or 10% of an operating system. So any other questions or thoughts before we close? Anybody want to add or ask anything? I really appreciate throughout. It's been such a privilege, and I appreciate all of your responses, questions, and comments. But anything else now while we're live time? And I'll still be interested in what you guys do, what happens. If you have any questions, let me know. I'll be interested in what you're up to. But anything else right now? Any other questions or comments?
I just want to thank you so much for that explanation. Thank you.
Absolutely, yes. There was another comment I didn't hear.
I was just going to comment, Dave, that this has been very, very productive for me, these past four sessions, and looking forward to reviewing the second and third one again.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, been very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That's good to know. That's exactly why I do this, because I already know what I think, and I agree with most of it. No, I really, what I write, what I do, what I put together, whether it's a book, a blog, a white paper, or a seminar series, is what do I most want to learn, and then set about learning it. So it's a benefit, and hopefully it'll be a benefit for others. So thank you very much. Thank you all very much. Again, I'm very grateful. It's been really a privilege and a pleasure working with you. You've really made it fun. And let me know if I can be of help to any of you. So thanks very, very much. I'll be sending, I mentioned I'm going to send around the takeaways from each of the four seminars just for you to review and see if you agree with these. They're kind of a bullet synopsis in a couple of pages. Might be interesting, might be helpful. See if it's useful to you. So I'll send that around to you. And I'll also, I was going to send the sample hub statements around. So I'll send both of those to you guys. Thanks very, very much.
Thanks, Dave. Have a good night.
Bye. Thanks.
So much.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely.